Good morning. The Honourable Jenny Macklin, Minister for Indigenous Affairs, Professor Mick Dodson, the co-chair of the National Inquiry into the Separation of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Peoples from their families, and also co-chair of Reconciliation Australia. Helen Moran, the chair of the National Sorry Day Committee, Mark Bin Barker, the deputy chair of the National Stolen Generations Alliance, my fellow speakers, we've heard from all of them now, Alex, Jeannie, Alfred and Lena, contributors to Us Taking Away Kids magazine, and all those contributors that are here today and that aren't here today. But we have a number of interstate visitors, Lorraine McGee-Spiel, Elaine Turnbull, Robert Sturman, Bev Liscombe, Mary Hooker, Emily Bullock and Charles Leon. Members of the Stolen Generations, representatives of LinkUp, Sorry Day Committees and Reconciliation Groups, my Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander brothers and sisters, friends and all the supporters who are here to support Indigenous Australia in our plight. I begin by paying my respects to the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation, the traditional owners of the land on which we're meeting today, and pay my respects to their elders past and present, and to thank Alan Madden for his generous welcome to country. Thank you also to the City of Sydney for your assistance in this launch and for providing the venue. On behalf of the Human Rights and Equal Opportunity Commission, or HERIOC, can I welcome you to the launch of Us Taking Away Kids, a magazine commemorating 10 years since the Bringing Them Home report was released, as well as an update, an updated Bringing Them Home online educational resource, which you'll see at the front that's available. And it's also online, so it's on the computer. The release of these materials brings to a close a year of activities by HERIOC for the 10th anniversary of the Bringing Them Home report, as well as a whole range of other events that are taking place. But can I take the opportunity to thank all of my staff and the staff at HERIOC who have worked on all of our materials this year, and I think culminating in this, which is a very worthy event, and the magazine. So thank you. The timing of the release of these materials could not be better. Yesterday we celebrated Human Rights Day, and that's a time when we honour the legacy of the Universal Declaration on Human Rights, or the modern world's Magna Carta. The language of the Universal Declaration encapsulates, in the most poetic and moving ways, the aspirations of generations of peoples worldwide for peace and harmony. And it is directly relevant to the continuing circumstances of the Stolen Generations. And the Universal Declaration reads, "Whereas recognition of the inherent dignity and of equal and inalienable rights of all members of the human family is the foundations of freedom, justice and peace in the world. Whereas the peoples of the United Nations have in the Charter reaffirmed their faith in fundamental human rights and in the dignity and the worth of the human person. Whereas a common understanding of these rights and freedoms is of the greatest importance for the full realisation of this pledge. And that the General Assembly proclaims this Universal Declaration of Human Rights as a common standard of achievement for all peoples of all nations. Human Rights Day is also the time where we celebrate the achievements of our fellow Australians in contributing to the realisation of these goals. And I'm delighted that joining us here today we have Mark Bin Barker and Alex Kruger, two men who were honoured at the Human Rights Awards yesterday for their contribution to promoting human rights in Australia and for their work which is predominantly relating to the Stolen Generations. Congratulations, Mark. The timing of the release of Us Taking Away Kids could also not be better, as it comes at a great time of importance to the future of our nation. The incoming Prime Minister, the Honourable Kevin Rudd, has indicated that he intends to apologise on behalf of the nation to the Stolen Generations. So in the coming months, the Prime Minister and his government will have a holistic opportunity, or a historical opportunity, to unite Australia by acknowledging the existence and the impact of this dark aspect of our history, by paying respect to the Stolen Generations for their suffering, their resilience and their dignity, and by laying the foundations for a reconciled Australia built on the respect for human rights and a commitment to social inclusion. Unfortunately, we're all too aware that this is not a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. This great challenge has been laid before federal governments before, once before at least, and on that occasion it did not seize the opportunity. So this moment represents a very rare thing, a second chance for the Australian Parliament to consider affirmative action. In the words of the Universal Declaration, this moment is a test for the nation of how truly we believe in the inherent dignity and the equal and inalienable rights of all members of the human family. In reflecting on Us Taking Away Kids magazine that is being launched by the Minister today, and thank you, Jenny, for that launch, I intend to outline for all of us here an agenda for addressing the outstanding issues faced by the stolen generations and key elements for the apology. Now, this speech is the first in a series of six that I'll be delivering nationally over the next 4.5 months, outlining an agenda for change across all areas of Indigenous affairs. I've termed this series of speeches Essentials for Social Justice. Subsequent speeches will address issues ranging from the very serious problem of a lack of engagement with Indigenous peoples in policy making and significant failures of the whole of government machinery currently in operation federally, to the Northern Territory intervention and child abuse issues, to a positive vision for our communities, such as by closing the gap in life expectancy and creating an equal life chance for all Indigenous children. It is appropriate in today's speech, the first of the series, and I simply titled it, Sorry. So let me begin by reflecting on the Us Taking Away Kids magazine. Now, at the beginning of the magazine is a quote from the autobiography of Alec Kruger called Alone on the Soaks, and it reads, "As a child, I had no mother's arms to hold me, no father to lead me into the world. Us Taken Away Kids only had each other, all of us damaged and too young to know what to do. We had strangers standing over us. Some were nice and did the best they could, but many were just cruel, nasty types. Many of us grew up hard and tough. Others were explosive and angry. A lot grew up just struggling to cope at all. They found their peace in other institutions or alcohol. Most of us learned how to occupy a small space and avoid anything that looked like trouble. We had few ideas about relationships, but no one showed us how to be lovers or parents. How to feel safe loving someone when they risked them being taken away or leaving us alone. Everyone and everything we loved was taken away from us kids. And I think that is very sad. The Us Taken Away Kids magazine tells the stories of Indigenous Australians removed from their families. It reflects on experiences of being removed and life in foster care and homes. Stories of discovery and discovering what had happened, of meeting their families for the first time, piecing together family histories as adults, and for some who are still waiting to be reunited, or for some who will never have the opportunity to be reunited. The magazine contains the stories, poems, photographs and artworks of the stolen generations. For many, it is the first time that they've shared their experiences in this way. This is something that Herriot and I personally am extremely grateful for. I think it is both an extraordinary, generous and brave endeavour by all the contributors. And in my view, it is something that we should all respect as a major move towards reconciliation. The magazine is a testament of the resilience of the stolen generations. By acknowledging the resilience and the hardship faced, we acknowledge the ongoing impact of our history on the lives of our fellow Australians. By recognising and paying respect for this, the magazine provides hope that as Australians we can move forward united on a basis of mutual respect, trust and good faith. As the stories in the poems reveal, the experiences of the stolen generations differ significantly. Some people have reconnected with their families and found peace. For others, the passage of time has found peace. And for others, that peace has eluded them. And they have not been able to discover their families. So the contributions in the magazines range from anger to funny, from deeply upset to reflective, and to uplifting. The magazine vividly demonstrates the ongoing impact of forcible removal policies on the lives of Indigenous peoples and families. And this is not an abstract debate about the past. It is about Australia, and it's about people's lives as they exist today. And the stories in the magazine highlight that this impact is raw and it is emotional, as we've heard and seen this morning. On page 13 of the magazine, it tells the stories of Lena Yarri and Alfred Coolwell, siblings who were reunited later in life, and we've just heard that. Their stories are accompanied by an extremely poignant photograph showing Alfred meeting members of his family for the very first time. Page 15 reproduces a poem by Vicky Roach about her friend Jack, who died in police custody some time ago. The magazine was provided in advance to Jeannie Hayes, a contributor to the magazine, and who was speaking to us earlier about her experiences. Upon reading the magazine, she told Herriot that she too had been a good friend of Jack's and was moved to see her being remembered in this way. And it was interesting that she had never ever met Vicky Roach. On pages 27 and 29, Eddie Thomas reflects on his experiences of speaking in the Tasmanian Parliament upon the passage of the Stolen Generations compensation legislation late last year. This is contrasted with Eddie's story on page 50 of the magazine, in which he recounts when he first met his brother as he was about to play AFL football, and how he played the game of his life to make his brother proud, and the sadness that ultimately prevailed over his brother's life. The magazine is full of moving stories like these, and I repeat how privileged I am and how I think we should all be to be invited to share in these stories. Storytelling, such as in the magazine, is crucial to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples. It is integral to the maintenance of our cultures, and it helps us to understand our heritage, and it is critical in defining our identity. The storytelling tradition of our peoples is one of great strength of our cultures. It contributes to our resilience as peoples, as it has throughout millennia. But we don't tell stories just for the sake of it. The Stolen Generations, and for the Stolen Generations, storytelling is an indispensable part of both recognising the suffering of the past and its impacts on the present, and of creating the basis for the journey of healing and for that journey to begin. And this is the significance of the apology. What many people have failed to understand over the past decade has been the emotional harm that it has caused by refusing to say sorry. On the face of it, a simple act described in denigrating terms by some as merely a symbolic action. For many in the Stolen Generations, it is so much more than this. The refusal to apologise has amounted to a denial of the life experiences of many of the Stolen Generations. They have not been able to tell their story in order to begin their healing. This has been reflected in vicious debates about whether children were stolen or, as some commentators say, were saved. In debates about whether the cross on the page amounts to consent to removal and therefore invalidates a person's claim to being forcibly removed. And it's reflected in the legal actions that have demonstrated the manifest inadequacies of addressing these issues through litigation. Such litigation, at great cost and emotional toll, has found that the legal system under which children were removed was so broad and sweeping in a scope that there is hardly any circumstances in which a child's removal would be considered unlawful. No duty of care has been found to be owed to the children removed, something that has always dumbfounded me as being quite extraordinary. The apology issue has led to a denial of the experiences of the Stolen Generations and of people's identity, and it has played a real role in perpetuating the harms of the past. An apology to the harm and what this has created is how, as a nation, we treated our Vietnam veterans. Because of the divisiveness of the war, it took almost a generation before the Australian public as a whole was able to embrace our veterans as heroes who had sacrificed much in the name of our country. The mental anguish caused to Vietnam veterans for their treatment is well documented, and the consequent feeling of belonging that they felt when such recognition did finally flow is also well known. There was also a broad feeling of healing and pride that was felt by Australian society as a whole once we had faced up to this and finally embraced our war heroes. And this is the importance of the apology. By acknowledging and paying respect, those who have suffered can move forward to heal and ultimately to belong. The apology will directly benefit members of the Stolen Generations by validating their experiences, and it will also benefit Australian society as a whole by building a bridge for the reconciled Australia, where we can all feel proud that our national story and the aspirations are shared, and that we are prepared to face difficult and dark experiences of our past. And it's not about black armbands and guilt. It's about inclusion and learning from the past. And ultimately, it's about providing space in the telling of our national story for the Stolen Generations. I must say I was deeply concerned when I saw the Guide to the Teaching of Australian History in Years 9 and 10 released a few months ago under the auspice of the former Prime Minister as part of his push for national education curricula. The Guide identified the importance of considering Indigenous perspectives of dispossession and European settlement up to 1850, and also encourages students to consider missionary and colonial activities directed to the protection of Indigenous Australians up to 1900. But it makes no direct reference to considering the experiences of the Stolen Generations over the course of the 20th century, nor does it refer to the Bringing Them Home report or the Stolen Generations. Now, this is quite simply a denial of history, leaving the issues unspoken. This must cease, and the apology will go a long way to setting us on the right course for this to occur. On page 65 of the magazine, there's a poem by Ian Fallon called I Am To Be, which reflects the dangers if we continue such denial. And I won't read it all, you can read it in the book, but I'll just some selected quotes. I am to be, your history's ghost return, haunting every moment despite your concerns. I am the offspring of my ancestors, bearing truth's memory despite all of yours. So to conclude, let me outline six challenges, key challenges for saying sorry and moving forward together. First, the apology must be done in a consultative and respectful manner. For the governments, this requires that the views of the Stolen Generations should be given prominence in determining the key elements of the apology. We know that there is a certain word or certain wording, and particularly that word, as we all know, that must be included in the apology to have any meaning to Stolen Generations. And that word is sorry. It requires more than this one word, though. There is a challenge to get the balance right between saying sorry for the practices of past governments and taking responsibility as the present government to address ongoing impacts and lead the nation to a better shared future. For the Stolen Generations, ultimately, the apology must be written by the government for it to have any real meaning. So there is a limit as to how far consultation should stretch. Second, the apology should be specifically about forcible removals. The purpose of the recommendations in Bringing Them Home is to apologise for policies of forcible removal and consequent harm, as well as to provide guarantees against repetition in the future. Now, this is a very specific purpose. I note that even in the past fortnight, there has been the far-right commentators who seem to dominate the opinion polls in most of our newspapers, and they've presented this issue as about anything that has ever happened to Australia and in Australia to Indigenous Australians since colonisation, or as providing a shield against any child being removed from circumstances of neglect or abuse in the future. Now this, in my view, is mischievous, misleading and disrespectful. It is timely for people to return to the exact wording of the Bringing Them Home report to remind ourselves of the exact purpose of saying sorry. It is not a catch-all, and it is not intended to overcome the needs for other action. Third, the apology should be done in such a way that it unifies our nation rather than divides it. Now, I have great faith that leadership from the highest levels of both sides of politics can ensure that this will occur. I note, for example, comments by the Shadow Minister for Indigenous Affairs, Mr. Tony Abbott, at the Sorry Day commemorations in May this year, May 2007, and he stated, "The forcible removal of Indigenous children from their families is an episode in our history of which we are rightly ashamed. There were some good intentions, if misguided, perhaps, and behind that policy. Still, the fundamental premise on which it was based, that children were better off away from their black families, was wrong. Indeed, it was repugnant. It was a policy based on race, not on reason. We should have known it then, and we certainly know it now, and we now have to atone for that." Similarly, the incoming Leader of the Opposition, Dr. Nelson, has stated that "we all have a responsibility to understand what happened in the past and that we should feel immense sorrow, in some cases shame." Dr. Nelson has expressed concerns about the apology in terms of not being personally responsible for the events of the past, but he has also stated that he'll wait and see before deciding whether bipartisan support can be provided for an apology. There is not too much of a distance to travel to obtain bipartisanship support for the apology. However, respectful dialogue will be necessary to achieve this, and not the smart little comments that we often hear. The apology will be all the more powerful for being from the Australian Parliament. As it stands, our national parliament is the only one across the country that has not formally apologised to date. Fourth, the apology should also be forward-looking and set out an aspiration for a united future for all Australians. Now, while the apology should be specific to stolen generations, it should also affirm the commitments of the Federal Parliament to partnership with Indigenous peoples and to continuing to work to address the legacies of the stolen generations. So while the apology will have a significant transformative and healing effect of itself, it will be necessary for it to be accompanied by other measures that implement the full scope of the recommendations of the Bringing Them Home report. We can expect, for example, that the apology will enable many of the stolen generations to break the cycle of grief that dominates their current situation. They will then be ready and will need the support to heal. As was noted in the 10th anniversary celebrations for Bringing Them Home in May, there are many aspects of the report that remain to be implemented and to provide a holistic address, and that's what's needed. And that's what's needed to be able to help in that healing process for the stolen generations. Fifthly, the apology should not be rushed. An artificial deadline, I was going to say within the first 100 days, should not be set for the timing of an apology. The timing should reflect that the elements discussed above have been met, and that is that they've been met in a respectful dialogue with Indigenous Australians, and the process has been aimed to build consensus and to unify the nation. The stakes are too high to get it wrong by rushing it through or not allowing the conversation for reconciliation to take place. Without being prescriptive, it may be that Sorry Day in May 2008 provides the ideal timing. I'm very much aware that many of the peak bodies are also referring to this date. The apology should, in my view, occur separate to the discussions regarding constitutional reform, including a new preamble to the Constitution. But it is clearly a necessary precursor to that broad-ranging discussion. The impact of the new preamble would also be to provide a sense of inclusion for all Indigenous Australians that is missing from the present framework in our legal system as it exists today. And sixth and finally, the apology should provide a catalyst for the states and territories to be held accountable for their responsibilities in implementing the Bringing Them Home Report recommendations.
Yay.
The absence of an apology from the Federal Parliament has left the Federal Government without the authority to drive the implementation of the Bringing Them Home Report. The apology should therefore form the basis for a renewed partnership between the Federal Government and State and Territory Governments to fully implement the report. And for example, only Tasmania has introduced a scheme to compensate for the impact of its forcible removal policies. And it's interesting to note by comparison that at present the Queensland Government has introduced the redress scheme to provide ex gratia payments to children in Queensland institutions and those children who have experienced abuse and neglect in those institutions. Up to $100 million is being made available for payments, for legal and financial services to applicants, and for practical assistance in completing applications. Now, it's not inconceivable to see how such a scheme could become the model to address the experiences of the stolen generations across the nation as a national scheme. All governments are responsible for the report's implementation, and it's timely for the federal government to take a leadership role in developing a national reparation process to be co-funded by the states and the territories. And this should be a priority for COAG, as the Councils of Australian Governments, to build on the work that is already under consideration by the Ministerial Council for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Affairs. And they have had a responsibility over many years now to monitoring the implementation of the recommendations of the report. So let me conclude by returning to Us Taken Away Kids. I want to finish by quoting a contributor to the magazine, George Toongery. Now George said, "When societies or cultures collide, it is often the children that suffer most. The past cannot be changed, but some of the wounds can be healed. The process for reconciliation must start with a candid recognition of what took place, the forcible removal of many Aboriginal children from their parents and their communities. The apology has the potential to be a landmark event in righting relationships between Indigenous and non-Indigenous peoples of our country by setting us on a new shared path into the future and by laying a platform to take the reconciliation agenda to the next level. So really now in concluding, can I just remind you that from self-respect comes dignity and from dignity comes hope. Thank you.